Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms, gardens, and wild spaces of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and with me today is Amy Erfling. She's a horticulturalist who's worked a lot in the Pacific Northwest on a lot of different demonstration and educational farms and gardens. And we're going to talk today about what do all those crazy definitions and words mean in seed catalogs, on plant tags, just to help you pick out the right plant for your garden. So welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
It's Teresa. So great to have you here. Yeah. Having a nice conversation in my greenhouse yes. recording studio.
Beautiful weather we've been having.
And this is a great time of year. Lots of people are starting to think about their gardens, get ready. Seed catalogs are piling up and, you know, nurseries are starting to get plants in again. And I feel like, you know, there was such a boom in interest in gardening mm-hmm. during the pandemic, these past couple of years of pandemic. Did you see that? I know you were working on places up in Alaska. Did you see that up there too?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of people who are especially interested in growing their own food more so now mm-hmm. than there were before, but even just spending time at home and then, you know, looking at what they want to do in their yards and kind of addressing those areas maybe more so than they were before.
Yeah, people had time on their hands
yes.
and were interested in stuff. And it's really exciting. And I hope that it sticks with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, some people maybe were coming back to gardening. Some people were starting for the first time. And I feel like gardening, it doesn't seem like it's that crazy and complicated, but there's definitely some nuances to mm-hmm. understanding things. And there's terminology, and it can be a little intimidating if you don't know what they mean.
Yeah, I agree.
And you can also make some mistakes. Like, I mean, and I'm just absolutely going to raise my hand and laugh at myself this year. I was talking to you about this yesterday, where last year I sowed seed for and got some beautiful starts and planted out Lunaria, money plant, mm-hmm. which is this gorgeous dried flower, like it's these little seed pods on it that look like little silver dollars hanging. I was super excited about it. And it, you know, I got these gorgeous lush plants and just like nothing was happening. I could think, well, maybe it's a late summer bloomer. Maybe it's like early autumn. And then I finally looked it up and it's like, it's a biennial. Uh-huh. So it wasn't even going to produce anything until its second year.
Yeah.
And I felt so stupid. Like, why did I not even look at that? I just had it in my head that it was an annual and I just assumed that it was. So maybe let's start there and just like the very basics, annual, biennial, perennial. What does that mean?
Yeah. So an annual is a plant that completes its entire lifespan in one season. So it'll, you know, basically grow, bloom, set seed and die within one season.
And a season doesn't have to be like, you know, spring to fall. It could be, you know, within a month.
Yeah, exactly.
It's life cycle.
It's life cycle.
But it's within a year.
A growing season.
Yeah.
And then a biennial then would be a two-year lifespan. So the first year, I guess you would say it sets roots and leaves and stems. And then the second year it would bloom and flower and seed and then die.
Yeah.
And then perennials, then would be at least 3-year lifespan or more.
Yeah. And those, I mean, within perennials, then you get herbaceous perennials.
Woody perennials. Right.
So I always thought of herbaceous perennials as ones that die back to the ground.
To the ground. Yeah, that's what I would consider.
So like an example of that would be like chives.
Yeah.
Well, here, I mean, you know, in some places they don't die back, but other things that like the whole plant dies back,
yeah.
And a woody perennial would be
like here, maybe like sage doesn't.
Yeah, rosemary lavender, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Woody perennials.
And then tender perennials would be, I guess, one that isn't winter hardy, that it will survive year to year, but it's actually not winter hardy, which you probably have more of those that survive here than I would in Alaska.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it just depends, you know, it seems to depend from year to year, you know, and, you know, as our climate is changing, you know, all bets are off with what's going to survive. But there's definitely plants that, you know, in another climate zone, they would be a perennial for sure. But here, maybe it'll make it through the winter and maybe it won't. You know, a one that I think that comes to mind for me is I love to grow anise hyssop, licorice mint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it can be a wonderful perennial and come back year after year. But then some years, and I'm a little worried about this past winter that we've had that's been pretty cold and wet and snowy, I don't know if it's going to come back as well. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it's that kind of sometimes they survive, sometimes they don't.
They don't, right.
And that holds true for annuals as well. You can have hardy and tender annuals mm-hmm. also.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's complicated.
It does get a little complicated, but I think, you know, mm-hmm. at least looking at those tags and seeing
yeah.
going in the right direction. And like you said, within a biennial especially, don't yeah. rip it out that first yeah. year. If it didn't bloom, it's yeah. really going to bloom the second year.
I find a classic one that people ask a lot about is parsley. Mm. Because I think a lot of people think it's a perennial, but it's a biennial, so it really just has a two-year life cycle.
Yeah.
So like the first you get all that great leaf action that
yeah.
you want,
yeah.
and then the second year it'll set seed. It'll bolt and set seed. And
right.
people keep asking me, like, well, if I just cut all the stems off, will it keep going? And you're like, yeah, for a little while.
But, right, yeah.
but it's going to die. You know, like, you have to just plant.
It has a life cycle, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, you can't yeah. monkey around with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are some of the other things that, like, what, you know, if you're looking at a plant tag or you're looking at a seed catalog, mm-hmm. Days to maturity comes to mind. That
yeah.
can be really confusing.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think, well, that's when, I guess it depends on how you're actually going to either direct seed the plant or if you're really starting it indoors and then putting it out as a transplant. So it's really the time that it's actually going to take for the plant to grow into harvestable or flowering, I guess you would say, time.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually you'll go by, and some of the catalogs will actually tell you specifically if it's something that is direct seeded, go by mm-hmm. the seed date, or if it's something that you tend to start indoors, that you actually go by the transplant date. So even though you seeded it, maybe like tomatoes, you'll seed them indoors, potentially, most people do, and then grow them up to a certain stage, but then you actually do the days to maturity from the time that you're transplanting it into
the ground
or maybe a bigger pot or, you know, mm-hmm. so that kind of depends on how you're,
'cause
either direct seeding or transplanting.
Yeah, because that yeah. plant could be a month old by the time you actually put it in the
yeah.
ground.
Yeah.
So, you know, and some of those tomatoes, the really early season ones, can be, you know, like, you know, 60 days to maturity.
Yeah.
So, and that's
pay
something.
Attention to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, but I think that's also a good yeah. thing to pay attention to for people making decisions about what to grow, because,
yeah.
you know, we don't certainly have as short a season as a place like Alaska does, but.
Yeah.
But here in the, you know, the North Oregon, Southern Washington region, it's still a shorter season.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those varieties, you know, it can be like, you know, 110 days to
yeah.
maturity. And
yeah.
like, forget that.
Right.
You
right.
know, for me, especially with a tomato, I, you know, it's like I won't grow anything that's below or more than like 80,
yeah.
85.
Yeah.
And I'm pushing it
yeah.
there. You know, I like the ones that are like 65 and less.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
That's my
yeah.
sweet spot with yeah. tomatoes. And that means like you've got a ripe fruit. Like
yeah.
it
right.
sets fruit, and if depending on when you plant it, it's probably got fruit on it when we're going into our warm time of year.
Yeah, and then it should hopefully actually ripen to a nice red or whatever color, yellow. Orange,
purple,
fruit.
Yeah, bang, yeah. striped.
Yeah.
But you have more of a chance of success.
Yes, yeah. And I think the thing that also I like to look at too with days to maturity is when I'm also planning, if I might have like some cauliflower or broccoli or cabbage or something that's like a 40 day or, and then some that are like 60 days to get more of a succession, you know, you could do succession planting or also getting ones that are different days to maturity to have a extended harvest of plants as well
yeah.
and crops.
And I think also think about that number as kind of a guideline.
Guideline, yes, definitely.
Because you know, yeah. we were talking about this, like, you know, it kind of depends on where that plant was trialed,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
where the seed company was trialing that plant and growing it and testing it and getting an average number of days to maturity so that they could say, oh, this takes 60 days or this takes 90 days
yeah.
or whatever.
Yes.
And it, in all likelihood, it wasn't being trialed on the North Oregon coast.
Probably not.
So, are, you know, your results may vary
yeah.
depending
yes.
on the year we're having
yeah.
and the weather.
Yeah, location, time of year, yeah.
So many different things.
Yes.
So those are things to pay attention to depending on where you are and where your garden is.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
and maybe something to like think about there, you'll often you'll see it'll say like zone 8B, or Zone 7A.
Yeah.
What is that?
That goes by the plant. I think it's a USDA plant hardiness zone. Mm-hmm. And that's how many, or your average frost date is what the hardiness is. So it's the cold, the lower numbers are really a colder region is basically what it is. And I know you were saying actually here, you guys have a lot of different zones.
It's funny.
Right in your county.
Just so that I had my act together, I checked and I looked up Clatsop County, yeah. Oregon, because it's where I am, and checked on what our USDA, and that's the United States Department of Agriculture, hardiness zone was. Yeah. And we actually have four in Clatsop County. It's 7B, 8A, 8B, and 9A.
Yeah.
So that's quite a range. It depends on where you are. So what it means is, you know, someone who has a garden in Jewell and someone who has a garden in Cannon Beach are going to have very different experiences in what their gardens can grow.
So
even within one county, we can't speak in general terms of like, well, that plant's absolutely going to survive here. So check your zone and then...
Your microclimates as well. I mean, there's always, sometimes you can push things a bit in terms of zones and what you can grow in areas.
Yeah.
With your microclimate. If you really want to try something. But
absolutely. And it's always great to experiment. And I love to push it sometimes. And, well, I'm just going to see if this will work here. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just, it's a good guideline. And
I think
especially like if you're spending a lot of money on seeds or plants, you know, you're going to the nursery, you don't want to buy a bunch of plants that are going to die.
Die, right. Yes, that's very true. Yes.
That would be, I mean,
yeah.
That may happen anyways.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about some of the other things, especially on seed packs, but you see this sometimes on plant tags too. Definitions like organic, heirloom, hybrid, open pollinated, you know, what are those, like, give us some idea about what some of those definitions really mean.
Yeah, so I think when you're especially looking at seed catalogs, I mean, one of the things that you see the most are like hybrid, open pollinated, and heirloom. And that mainly is, you really need to be thinking about that if you're going to save seed. And so anything that's a hybrid, you'll see like F1 hybrid. And those are a cross between like two different varieties. And that's not like genetically modified. It's really that they're like,
It's a classic old style plant breeding.
Old school plant breeding. That's great.
It's not genetically modified. Yeah.
But if you're saving seed, you won't get seed that's true to type from a hybrid.
Yeah.
So that's where you would want to consider, if I want to actually try to save this seed, don't do a hybrid. But they're great. I mean, hybrids, why they're hybrids and people cross-pollinate and breed is to actually get things like really vigorous plants, great fruits, you know, they've been bred for certain characteristics that are desirable.
And sometimes disease resistance.
Disease resistance, yes.
Cold hardiness, things like that. So there's a lot of work that happens in hybridization.
Yeah.
But again, like if you are a home gardener or a farmer and you really want to be able to save your own seeds,
open pollinated and heirloom. So all heirlooms are open pollinated. And so heirloom is something that's been around for a long time. It's, you know, I've tried to actually look this up if there is a certain like
definition
of like, has it been around for 100 years?
It's all over the place.
And I did find all over the place, like things that, and I kind of mainly think, you know, it's just been around for a long time.
I've seen some people say it's like pre-World War II.
Pre-World War II. I saw that too, yes.
I don't know why World War II. I don't know what changed there necessarily, but a lot of times it'll be a variety that existed and was known and grown before World War II. And then, but there's a lot of things. Sometimes you see plants that are called, it's like a modern heirloom. Or plants that are referred to as heirlooms, but they're actually, you know, from, like a classic one I see is the green zebra tomato, which I love.
Yeah.
It was bred by a seed breeder named Tom Wagner, and I think it was in the 1980s that he bred that, but it's considered an heirloom, and a lot of times people market it as an heirloom tomato, but it's not.
Technically. Yeah, right.
So, but you know, heirlooms are just generally...
Yeah.
And they are all
open. They're all open pollinated. And then open pollinated, really just means that it will produce seed that's genetically true to type. So if you want to, if you want to collect seed that you would want open pollinated, and that's not saying that there are obviously like pumpkins and a lot of brassicas can cross pollinate and then you might not get something that's true to type. But if it is isomorph isolated, that, and you want to
seed saving,
that's a whole other subject.
Yeah. Whole conversation. I know it's, and I didn't mean to confuse people, but it's just check. Saving seeds is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And I feel like I should probably do a whole show just about that.
Yeah, you could.
but you also want to check and make sure that whatever variety is that you're saving, you know, like you said, number one, it should be open pollinated, mm-hmm. but that it's not something that, I love this, seed breeders talk about plants that are promiscuous.
Oh, yeah.
And it's that they cross pollinate with other plants that are like them. And squash are notoriously promiscuous plants.
Yes.
So
yes.
If you have two different pumpkins growing, two different varieties of pumpkins, mm-hmm. even if they're open pollinated, you can't save seed from them because they will cross pollinate and you won't get pumpkin.
Yep. Yeah.
So plants are complicated.
They do get complicated. Yeah.
But they're wonderful.
But they're wonderful, right.
And mysterious. Those are all cool things to start looking into, but you know, just things to pay attention to on those tags and those catalogs so that you can make better choices about, do I really want to grow this plant?
Yeah.
You know, if your goal is to save seed, you know, think about maybe you just grow one variety of pumpkin and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And you only save seed from that.
And make sure it's open pollinated or heirloom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about things that talk about in like different kinds of plants? We were talking about things like in the tomato world, which I think a lot of people get very excited about tomatoes, mm-hmm. things like indeterminate and determinate plants, you know, that can make a big difference in your experience of that tomato plant. So talk a little bit about what those two things mean.
Yeah, so I think those are definitely ones that you really should know if you're going to grow tomatoes to make good decisions. And so determinate would be one of plant that is more, the growth is more compact and bushy, I guess you would say, and usually you don't need trellising. And
it then has a finite size.
Yeah,
usually.
Finite size, yeah. And then generally it will actually produce fruits more of like a shorter period of time, but a bunch all at mm-hmm. one time, like Roma tomatoes are a classic determinate. So if you want to get a bunch of harvested at one time, that going with more of a determinate, if you're only growing a few plants. And then indeterminate is more of a vining, trellising type that will just keep growing and growing and growing.
They'll get as big as you let
you
them.
You want them to, yeah. Right,
I mean, just, I have had some like 20-foot long trails of tomato plants when they got out of control in my greenhouse.
Yeah.
So some of those, like some of the, a lot of the classic cherry tomatoes that people love are classic indeterminates.
Yes.
I mean, they
cherry
can
tomatoes
get
are
huge.
Yeah. And there you'll be able to harvest over a longer period of time, you know, because it just keeps growing and growing and growing, but generally it'll be smaller amounts at one time, unless you have, you know, 100 plants, then you can get a bunch of what,
absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. But it can become very jungly.
Yes. Yeah.
And they definitely need to be trellised or
trained.
And a lot of times, and I would say this to people, like, an indeterminate tomato is not going to be happy in one of those little tomato cages, like the little 4-foot tall tomato cages that you get at the store. That is not good enough. I mean, I'm like, trellis it up a fence.
Right.
Put something big up there and don't be afraid to prune it or pinch it back.
Yeah.
Because they can, especially if they're in a spot they like, they can get out of control.
Out of control. Yes. Yes.
Which can be great.
Right.
But it can also be very challenging.
Right.
What about some of those other cool terms you were mentioning? I think like, especially related to
cucumbers. Yeah. So cucumbers, and a lot of this gets into like, if you're going to grow in a greenhouse, because I have had experience growing specifically in like controlled environments, mm-hmm. doing aeroponics and hydroponics where you're really not having pollinators in there actively. And so there, especially with cucumbers, you start to look at plants that are, they're mostly monoecious. So that means that you have a separate male flower and female flower. They're separate flowers, which you see with squash mm-hmm. as well, but they're on the same plant.
Okay.
So you'll have like the male flowers bloom and then the female flowers bloom. And in order to get pollination, you have to get it from the male flower to the female flower. And since cucumbers are an insect pollinated plant, they're not wind pollinated, you know, you do have to somehow have it go from male plant to female, or male flower to female flower.
And usually this is being done by bees or other
yeah,
insects.
Yeah, right, right. So then when you start getting into like growing maybe in a greenhouse, you really actually want to look more at gynoecious plants, which means that they're almost all female flowers. But what they tend to do is then have like about maybe 5% will still be male. And this is done with breeding work. Mm-hmm. And then parthenocarpic, which means that they don't actually set... they set fruit without pollination. And I know that seems like it's impossible, but the plants have type of hormones that actually stimulate the ovaries to mm-hmm. mature. So that's
even without pollination.
Even without pollination, yeah. It's yeah related to, I guess, temperature and day length. And I don't really quite understand how that all
it's
happens.
Magical. It's magical.
It's magical. But that's generally when you see like greenhouse growing cucumbers mm-hmm. are usually gynoecious and yeah. parthenocarpic, so that you can yeah. still get this like amazing amount of fruit because they're almost all female. But then they also don't need to be pollinated because... they can set fruit without pollination. It's like magic.
Which yeah. sounds great. So probably an heirloom cucumber wouldn't be...
It's monoecious, most
yeah,
likely.
They would be monoecious. Yeah. So I think have, just yeah. still create healthy environments for your bees in your
yes.
garden.
Yes. yeah.
If you want to grow cucumbers and squash and things like that. Because yeah. I think it's always better to have insect pollination
yeah.
available. And the more welcoming your garden is to pollinating insects, the more mm-hmm. likely you are
yeah.
to have a good fruit set.
Yes. Yeah.
It's good things yeah. to pay attention to.
Yeah. But there are, you do see that in catalogs a lot, especially with cucumbers, as they'll be like, it's gynoecious or monoecious. And just to kind of know what that is. But your typical cucumber plant is probably going to be monoecious.
Yeah.
But yeah. So those are just things to yeah be aware of.
It's, but, you know, it is so fascinating to think about all these different terms. And it's a lot to pay attention to when you're just trying to, like, you just want to go to the nursery and buy a bunch of plants to put in your garden.
Yeah.
You know, are you excited the seed catalogs have come, you want to shop. I just want to buy these things and have them grow. But doing a little bit of research and just understanding some of this terminology is going to make you better able to make better choices about mm-hmm. what you want. Like sometimes knowing maybe you just have a tiny space to do a tomato in, well, look for a determinate
yeah.
variety. Don't yeah. look for a big indeterminate one.
Right.
You yeah. know, those are things, you know, or maybe you live someplace where it is really short season, you know, and you want to get something that's a short season variety. Mm-hmm. And that's not just for tomatoes. That's you know, squash and other
yeah.
things too. Lots of other things. Looking at that days to maturity.
That's really important. Yeah.
I think in a climate like ours, I mean, yeah. it's not as extreme as in Alaska where you've done a lot of your growing.
Yeah.
But still, it's something we should pay attention to.
Definitely. Yeah.
Here, you know, and hardiness. One of the ones that I loved that I just want to talk about, because as we were talking about what are these definitions?
Yeah.
I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong. Is it allelopathy?
Allelopathy. Yeah.
Allelopathy. Mm-hmm. In plants, and that is plants that are really good at outcompeting
yeah.
other plants. And a lot of times it's like chemical, hormonal things
yep,
that they exude.
Into the soil, yeah.
And mm-hmm. They basically kill the other plants, or
yeah.
they make a very hostile environment around their base
yeah.
so that other things don't want to grow around them. And the classic is black walnut.
Black walnut.
So, you know, if you want to plant a walnut tree, be very careful
yeah.
where you put it.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
nothing else is going to grow around it. But
yeah.
in looking that up, even things like rhododendrons.
I know, that's interesting. You're saying
were,
that. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
are plants that, you know, are able to kind of clear out the underbrush
yeah.
underneath them. So look at things like that mm-hmm. and just check and make sure that the plant you're wanting to put in your garden plays well with others.
Yeah, especially if you're looking to invest in, yes, like a bigger, like a tree or something. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Or shrubs or, yeah.
And, you know, just thinking about plays well with others, one of the things that we, I think, initially talked about was, and this would be something you'd see, well, you can see it on a plant tag too in a nursery, but in a seed catalog too, where it says reseeds.
Oh, yeah.
Or self-sows. Yeah. That can be a huge red flag.
Yes. Yeah. Unless you want it to. Really
Unless you
take
want it to,
yeah.
but.
Yeah.
You know, I have a tremendous terror sometimes about just like introducing a new monster
yes.
onto my farm,
yeah.
like unwittingly. And sometimes self-sows can be like, it really self-sows. And that
yeah.
would mean it's often an annual, right?
Yeah. And then, but it will, like the seed will survive
in, through the winter.
In the winter and then regrow again where you didn't really mm-hmm. maybe want it to be growing.
Yeah. yeah. I know some classic ones in our area, things like calendula is a classic reseeder. I think nasturtiums will often reseed if they like where they're growing.
Uh-huh.
And that isn't necessarily problematic. But you know, one that I find, and I'm seeing a lot of it this year, and it's not terrible, but lemon balm.
Oh yeah.
As
yeah.
an herb, it's a beautiful, pretty hardy perennial herb, so mm-hmm. it's not even an annual. It's gorgeous, fragrant
yeah.
Leaves. It's lovely, but boy, does it like to see itself.
Yeah.
And they can start showing up everywhere.
All over the place, yeah.
Not where you want it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
fortunately, it's pretty easy to spot.
Yeah.
And if you just rub the leaves, you know, oh, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But I have catnip that seeds
catnip,
itself.
Catnip, you're saying, yeah.
I saw everywhere.
Yeah.
Feverfew yeah. seeds itself everywhere. And
yeah.
that can be lovely.
Yeah.
Poppies will sometimes do that.
Yeah, yeah. Depending on if you want it or not. Yeah.
Do you find sometimes that like the more you want something to reseed, the less likely
that it
is?
Do it. Right. Yes, I do find that. Yeah. Why won't you just reseed? I'd love it if you would reseed. Yeah.
Sometimes I really struggle with that. And you
yeah.
can sometimes save those seeds, throw them around in different places
mm-hmm.
and try to get them to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It won't always work, but I have definitely had plants that yeah, I'm sad that I started that plant.
Yeah. Yeah, another one I like to look out for is if you see the term extremely vigorous.
Oh yeah.
I've seen that term before and I'm like, ooh, maybe I should watch out for that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I want an extremely vigorous plant.
It could be a bully.
Yeah.
It could start popping up everywhere.
Yeah, right.
I know my friend Jane has she's planted hardy kiwi. Like the little kiwi berry vines
mm-hmm.
in her garden on either side. And they're beautiful and the vines are gorgeous. And she does get little fruit if she protects it from the birds and it's amazing. But boy, that thing runs underground
and
it
yep.
pops up
yeah.
everywhere.
Yeah.
So that would definitely be an example of a vigorous plant.
Yes, yeah.
And that maybe you'd want to think about where you're going to put that.
Yeah, yeah. So sometimes trying to see, you know, read some of those things in the catalog or the tag and maybe
mm-hmm.
question sometimes if they say something like that.
Yeah. Did you find in doing some research for this, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet if you just, you know, Google some definitions
mm-hmm.
and look for stuff like that.
Yeah.
A lot of basic gardening books would have some of this or maybe a botany
yeah, yeah.
for gardeners
oh,
or something
definitely.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then also just ask.
Yeah.
Ask at a nursery. Ask a friend. Ask your master gardeners.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes we get intimidated, you know, when we are, especially if you're new to a hobby or a project or something that you're learning to do, it can be really easy to be too nervous to ask. You don't want to look dumb.
Yeah, right.
But like, I've been farming for almost 20 years now,
yeah.
and I didn't realize that Lunaria wasn't an annual.
Yeah.
So, hey there, you know what?
Yeah.
You can be really experienced
yeah.
and still blow it.
Oh, definitely. But that's what's so great about this profession as well, is that there's so much to learn.
I know. There really is. There absolutely is. Well, I hope that our definitions help everybody out there make some good choices this spring. If you've been listening to us, I've been speaking with Amy Erfling. She's a horticulturist, very experienced plant grower.
Yeah.
And thanks, Amy. I'm so appreciative
you.
For
yeah.
your sharing the information with us and for joining us for this week's In Season.
Yeah.